The stone came through the window before David finished his letter. The glass burst into a handful of black shards. One of them bit his cheek. He touched his fingers to the skin and drew them back, marked with a bead of red, shining like fresh ink on parchment. On the table, the aleph he had been tracing for an hour stayed unfinished, one line, tilted, that no one would complete tonight. In the corner of the room, Leah dropped her wooden horse and started to scream. "Boutons!" she wailed, as though it were the toy that had been hurt and not the window. Grandfather Yankel sprang up, knocking his workbench over. Leather straps and needles rolled across the floor with a dry clatter. He crossed the room in three strides and pulled Leah against him before he had even looked at the gaping hole in the pane. "Stay behind me, David," he said, his voice low, without a tremor. David did not step back. He picked up the stone, still warm from being gripped in a fist, and turned it over in his hands. A smell of smoke drifted through the broken glass, bitter, unlike the smell of wood burning in a hearth. It smelled of straw, and of something worse than straw. "Who did that?" Leia asked, her voice full of tears but not yet fear. Only the incomprehension of a child faced with a cruelty that had no face. No one answered her right away. Yankel ran a rough thumb along Leia's arm, searching for a cut, a mark, anything that might explain the shaking of his own hands. He found nothing. She was unhurt, only afraid of the noise, and that did not reassure the old man in the slightest. David still held the stone. There was nothing special about it. A plain river pebble, gray and cold, the kind you scooped up by the handful along the banks of the Vltava to skip across the water for fun. Tonight it weighed heavier in his palm than any scribe's tool he had ever held. He set it down at last on the workbench, beside the scattered leather straps, rather than throw it away. He did not know why he kept it. Later he would tell himself it was to remember, but that night, in the moment, it was mostly because his fingers refused to let it go. David was 13 years old, and he already knew that smoke never lies about what it burns. For two winters he had lived with Leia in their grandfather's bookbinding shop, at the end of an alley so narrow that two men could not pass without brushing shoulders. Their parents had died of fever the same week, that year, and David had sworn to himself, alone in the dark of the room they had shared, never again to let someone he loved die. He was 7 years older than his sister. He often behaved as though he were 7 years older than Yankel, too. The old bookbinder had ink and glue stained into his hands up to the knuckles, two colors that never washed out, and a voice that knew how to scold as well as it knew how to comfort. He raised his son's children the way he mended a damaged book, tightening each thread one at a time, never rushing the stitch. The shop smelled of warm hide glue, old leather dust, and that evening, something new and cold. David, for his part, was learning to trace Hebrew letters better than any other boy his age in the ghetto. The neighborhood scribe, a dry man named Mendel, said his hand never shook over the kalame, even when his heart shook plenty. It was his one admitted pride, the single thing he did better than anyone else. He did not yet suspect that this same hand would soon make him dangerous to himself and to everything he loved. Leia was six and feared almost nothing except the dark beneath the stairs and the thought of losing Boutons, her wooden horse with a chipped muzzle, carved by a cousin who had gone west before she could walk. She stuck to David like a smaller shadow of his own. That night she held the horse so tightly against her that the wood left a white mark on her forearm. "Stay with your sister," Yankel said, handing Leia to David. His own hands, meanwhile, already trembled as he pushed the bolt on the inner door. Earlier that day, before the evening turned, David had still been a boy like any other, sitting on Mendel the scribe's low stool, copying lines of prayer onto scraps of parchment too damaged for a real book. Between corrections, Mendel had mentioned a crowd gathering near the ramparts, a man asking too many questions about who came and went from the ghetto. David had not paid much attention. A 13-year-old scribe had better things to do than listen to adult rumors, or so he believed then. He understood now the quiet foolishness of that thought. Outside, footsteps ran. Not the pace of a child at play, nor of a merchant heading home. Heavy footsteps, several of them, hammering the uneven cobbles of the alley with something urgent and wrong in the rhythm. A woman's voice was calling a name somewhere in the distance, over and over. The name of a Christian child David had already heard spoken that day, at the fountain, at the baker's, everywhere the gossips gathered in low voice. A small boy from the neighborhood beyond the ramparts had gone missing 3 days ago. He had not been found. It was no longer a fountain rumor tonight. It was a stone through a window. Yankel eased the door open just wide enough to see. David slid under his arm before the old man could stop him. A neighbor, Reb Aharon the tanner, was passing their house at a half run, one hand pressed to his hat to keep it from flying off. He stopped just long enough to gasp, his breath cutting his words in two. "They're saying it was us. They're saying we took him for his blood for All Saints, Ev." He spat on the ground, a thing he would never have done in front of children on an ordinary evening. "Get inside. Get inside and don't go out again tonight."
"Nah, well."
From the back of the room, Leah called out in a small voice. "Who took who, grandfather?" "No one, my little dove," said Yankel without turning around. "No one from here took anyone." But his hand, on David's shoulder, tightened a little harder, and David felt in that grip everything his grandfather was not saying in front of Leah. Further down the alley, the cobbler Isaac's shop had its wooden sign torn loose, hanging crooked from a single nail, and new shoes lay trampled in the gutter. One sole already blackened by mud. An abandoned cart near the well was still smoldering, its planks reduced to a heap of gray embers, spitting a low smoke that rolled over the cobbles like a dirty fog. The smell of soot clung to the walls, to the clothes, to the inside of David's nose, where it would linger long after the smoke itself had cleared. No one stopped to pick up the shoes. Isaac himself stood in his doorway, arms crossed over his chest, as though he could keep his home from emptying just by standing in front of it. David wanted to step closer to look, but Yankel pulled him back by the collar. "This isn't a show," he said. "Two words, an entire lesson." That was how Yankel spoke. Few words, but ones that stayed with you long after you heard them. At the end of the alley, where the ghetto opened onto the small square before the church, torches were gathering. David counted to about 10 before losing track, each one held aloft by a man he did not know, a face he might never see again, but whose anger, tonight, belonged to everyone. A man stood on the church steps, towering over the crowd. He was tall and thin, his black cassock too short for his legs, as though he had grown since it was sewn for him. His fingers were long, almost fleshless, and when he raised them toward the sky to call for silence, the crowd obeyed at once, like a flock that recognizes its shepherd's voice even in the dark. David did not yet know his name. He would soon learn they called him Brother Thadi. The man was smiling. That was the detail David would remember longest, later, more than the words themselves. That gentle, almost tender smile, set on a face that heralded the ruin of an entire people. A pale scar crossed his raised right hand, an old burn mark, and the torchlight seemed to cling to it more than to anything else about him, as if the fire recognized it. "A child of God has vanished," he said, not shouting, his voice carried to the back of the alley by the very silence it commanded. "You all know where they take the lost children in that quarter. You all know what their rites demand, on the eve of their dead feasts." "Nuss!" The crowd rumbled, a low sound, almost animal, that made David step back without deciding to. "I am told there is no proof," Thadde went on, and he let the word hang for a moment like a hook. "But the absence of proof has never been the absence of crime. Sometimes it is only the absence of courage to seek it."
Yeah.
Men nodded. A woman in the front row clutched a rosary so hard her knuckles whitened. A little further off, a boy in a surplice, an altar boy barely 10 years old, stood stiff at the foot of the steps, his eyes fixed not on the crowd but on Brother Thaddi himself, as if waiting for a signal that never signaled, that never came. David barely noticed him that night. One more pale face in a crowd of tense ones. David felt his mouth fill with the taste of iron, as if he had bitten the inside of his cheek without noticing. In 5 nights, Brother Thaddi went on, and his voice grew softer still, which made it worse. In 5 nights it will be All Saints' Eve, the night the dead return to collect what is owed them. I will not let that night rise on an unpunished crime, nor on a second one. Oh. He said nothing more. He did not need to. A murmur of agreement ran through the crowd, more terrible than any shout, because it was calm, because it sounded like a decision already made. A voice rose anyway, somewhere at the edge of the square, a man from the ghetto who had risked showing himself. "We never touched any child," he shouted, his voice broken by fear as much as anger. 2 men from the crowd seized him before he could say another word, and Brother Thaddi, without so much as glancing his way, kept smiling at the rest of his audience, as though the interruption had been nothing more. Then a fly brushed off a sleeve. Yankel shut the door hard, drove the wooden bar into its brackets, and for the first time since David had known him, his hands shook while doing it. David stayed pressed against the door, listening to the torches move off toward another street, another door, another family who had done nothing either. His hands were damp against his thighs. His mouth still held that taste of iron, and his knees, when he tried to take a step toward the fire, nearly buckled beneath him, as if they had forgotten how to carry his weight. He counted, under his breath, to 10, then to 20. The way he traced the dots of a letter to calm himself when words were not enough. Leah was not crying. She stared at the closed door with wide fixed eyes, buttons pressed against her stomach, and that silence frightened David more than any cry could have. "Why did he say 5 nights? She asked at last, in a small, sharp voice, the way only children know how to ask the questions that hurt the most. David opened his mouth to answer, but nothing came out. It was Yankel who spoke, kneeling in front of her, his old bones creaking in the silence of the room. "Because in 5 nights it will be Halloween, my little dove. All Saints' Eve. A night when people are afraid, and fear makes them say things they'll regret." He stroked her hair. "But this house will hold until then. I promise you." They spent the rest of the evening repairing what could be repaired. Yankel nailed a board over the broken pane, his movements slower than usual, as if each hammer blow cost him an effort he showed to no one. David swept up the glass shards by the light of a tallow candle, its warm wax dripping onto his fingers and setting into small yellow beads on his skin. He also picked up his unfinished aleph, the sheet stained by a drop of blood from his cheek before he could wipe it away, and slid it under a pile of other pages without knowing why he wanted to keep it. The smell of smoke outside did not really leave. It only drew back, like a dog still prowling somewhere in the night. "Grandfather," David said, handing Yankel a last nail, "will they really believe we hurt that child?" Yankel drove the nail in before answering. 3 sharp, precise blows. "People believe whatever frightens them least to admit," he said at last. "It's easier to believe a neighbor is a monster than to admit a child simply got lost. Or worse." He set down the hammer. "That doesn't make them any less dangerous, David. It just makes them sadder to watch." "Won't the watch do anything?" David asked. "The city guards sometimes pass by in the evening on horseback, never stopping near the ghetto longer than it took to cross it." "The watch protects those who pay the watch," Yankel answered, without apparent bitterness, as though stating a fact as plain as the color of the sky. "We pay our taxes. We don't pay the watch." He gathered his remaining nails into a leather pouch. "A solid door is worth more than a soldier's promise, boy. Remember that." "No." When everything had gone quiet, or at least as quiet as the night allowed, Yankel settled Leah onto the straw mattress she shared with David in the alcove behind the workshop. She refused to let go of Bootens, holding him the way one holds the one thing that had not changed on an evening when everything else had.
Grandfather, Leia said, her voice small again. Are they going to come back and break the window?
Not tonight, Yankel answered, pulling the blanket up to her chin.
Tonight, the house holds.
And if they come back another night? Yankel sat on the edge of the mattress, his knees cracking like old leather. He took a moment before answering, a moment David noticed, because his grandfather never usually had to search for his words.
Then the Guardian will protect us, he said finally, almost despite himself, as if the words had slipped out rather than been chosen.
Leia sat up all at once, her whole body woken by those three words.
What, Guardian?
David sat up too on his stool by the fire. He had never heard his grandfather say that word with such gravity, nor with the silence that followed, as though Yankel already regretted having spoken. Before answering, the old man raised his hand to his throat, where a small square of stitched cloth hung beneath his shirt, a Hebrew talisman he had worn longer than David had been alive. He held it a moment between two ink-stained fingers, as one checks that a thing is still there before speaking of another.
An old story, Yankel said, too quickly for it to truly be an old story.
He looked at the fire rather than at the children, and his ink-stained fingers began turning the copper ring he always wore, aimlessly.
They say that under the roof of the old new synagogue, in the attic, no one ever visits, sleeps a giant made of clay from the Vltava. They call him Yosel.
Rabbi Lo, our great rabbi, shaped him long ago to watch over us on nights like this one.
Yeah. Wow.
A giant made of mud? Leia wrinkled her nose, more intrigued than frightened.
Where does he sleep exactly?
Is he nice?
Tee. Enough questions, my little dove.
Yankel laid a hand on her forehead, a gesture more tender than stern.
Sleep now.
A sleeping giant doesn't like people talking too loudly about him.
Whoa.
But David had no intention of letting it drop so easily.
How do you wake him? He asked, the question out of him before he had decided to ask it.
It was his way of admitting he already wanted to know too much. Yankel turned his head toward his grandson, and for the first time that evening he looked old.
Not tired.
Old, like someone who has carried a weight so long, he has forgotten the shape of his own shoulders without it.
That's not a question to ask, he said. It's a question to let sleep.
But is he really asleep? David pressed, his voice a little too loud for the hour and the room. Or is he just waiting for someone to...
David. Part.
Yankel's tone cut the sentence off short, sharper than any word he had used all evening. Then he softened at once, as though already regretting his harshness, and leaned toward the fire to throw on a log it did not need.
A golem never sleeps, boy, he said finally,
so low that David had to lean in to hear him.
He waits.
And what has waited that long doesn't wake for a stone through a window. It takes far more than that, and far worse.
Pray you never find out.
And, it is bar.
Grandfather,
David tried once more, despite the look Yankel gave him.
Have you ever seen him?
Yankel stayed silent so long that David thought he would get no answer that night. When the old man finally spoke, his voice had none of the gentleness he kept for Leia.
You don't ask an old man whether he's already seen death, he said.
You leave it to him, and you pray never to see it yourself. Now sleep or pretend to, that will do.
Nice try, hey, Benny.
He stood, tidied two tools that did not need tidying, and avoided David's eyes for the rest of the evening. Leia had already slipped into sleep, Bootens tucked under her chin, as if the word guardian had been enough to reassure her more than any barred door. David sat by the fire a long while after Yankel had gone to bed on the other side of the curtain that split their two corners of the room, listening to the embers crackle and slowly collapse in on themselves. Through the gap between the freshly nailed boards over the window, he could see a patch of black sky, and further off,
the dark mass of a roof taller than the others, that of the old new synagogue, its peak cutting against the stars like an upturned blade. He thought of the word his grandfather had let slip. Yoseli. He repeated it 3 times in his head, without moving his lips, the way one learns a new letter before knowing how to trace it oneself. 5 nights. That was what Brother Thaddy had promised his crowd, standing on the church steps, his gentle smile settled over them like a poisoned blessing. 5 nights before the torches came back, not to break a window this time, but to open a door, and maybe more than a door. David watched Leia sleep, her breathing steady, a strand of hair stuck to her cheek by the warmth of the dying fire. He looked next at the door his grandfather had barred, which would not hold long against men armed with torches and certainties. He thought of Isaac the cobbler, standing before his gutted shop, arms crossed over nothing. He thought of the cart still burning somewhere at the end of the alley, and of the altar boy at the foot of the steps, whose pale face would not leave his thoughts without his knowing why. He thought too of his unfinished Aleph, that single tilted line under the pile of pages. A scribe learned to trace letters that carried a sacred name without ever daring to write it out in full himself, out of respect, out of caution. Mendel had taught him that as one rule among others. That night, for the first time, the rule no longer felt like a lesson in calligraphy. It felt like a warning. He swore to himself, without a word, without even moving his lips this time, that he would learn what his grandfather refused to tell him. Not to become a hero, he did not even think of it in those terms. So that the next stone would find no one to hurt. So that Leia would keep her wide, calm eyes, and not the eyes he had seen that evening on the faces of the neighbors, full of fear. He knew where to look. The old new synagogue was only a few alleys away, and its attic, whatever he had been told, remained a place a 13-year-old's legs and enough stubbornness could reach. He did not yet know what he would do once he stood before that locked door. He knew only that he would no longer be able to fall asleep without thinking of it. On the workbench, in the dark, the river stone still lay where he had left it, beside his unfinished Aleph. 2 cold objects. One that had nearly hurt his sister, the other bearing the first letter of a name never spoken in full. David could no longer see them from his mattress, but he knew they were there, and that was enough to keep his mind from settling completely. Before closing his eyes, he cast one last glance at the gap between the boards. The synagogue's roof still stood outlined against the stars, motionless, as it had always been for as long as David had known how to look. But in the space of one breath, just before his eyelids closed for good, David thought he saw something move along that dark ridge. Very slowly, like a thing stirring in its sleep without quite waking. He told himself it was a bird. He kept telling himself that until sleep took him, and he never knew, that night, whether he had truly believed it.